But, you know, living all my life in the same apartment, but Flushing Meadows, only about a mile and a half, 2 miles south of where I live. And so I remember they said that they were going to be building a baseball stadium, and they were going to be building a World's Fair. And I was like maybe 11, 12 years old. I used to go to my friend's apartment a couple of floors above mine, and he had a more southerly view, and we were able to watch them as they were putting up a lot of the pavilions.
Wow.
That must have been cool.
Oh, it was wonderful, because it was like all of a sudden there was this magic land being created out of a park that was doing nothing.
Now, Mark, let's go to Landfill, California, where the beautiful rock sand pavement, dark star of the Mandatory Entertainment Corps, awaits to talk to you.
I am unbelievably honored to be here at remote Indio Perdido Lake near the bank of the lusty Colorado River, where an earth-moving miracle is taking place as far as the eye can see.
What a piece of asphalt.
Yes, Mark. This is Panorama Land 2000, where all of civilization is being gathered together on a desert-contoured, climate-conditioned, and completely re-greened landfill. Wherever you stand, sit or lie in Panorama Land 2000, there will always be something new.
And there was a remnant of the 1939 World's Fair that still existed, which was the which became the New York City Pavilion.
Yeah, they built that globe on part of the 39 exhibit, I think.
Yeah, the Unisphere is built on the site where the Trilon and Perisphere were.
Okay.
And those were the symbols of the 39-40 World's Fair. And they pretty much used the same layout from the 39-40 World's Fair for the 64 and 65 World's Fair. And as I sent to Kurt a map that shows you that if you drew a line down the center point of the World's Fair property and extend that line, the line would extend right to the Statue of Liberty.
And that was intentional, right?
It had to be, because if they were off a degree or two in either direction, that wouldn't have worked.
Right.
It's a perfect lineup. And when I heard about that a couple of years ago, that increased my fascination over the fairgrounds and what they really meant. Because to me, the fairgrounds was a magic, magic place. So I did watch them put up a lot of the pavilions, build the Unisphere, the New York State Towers, which are still there. And I just couldn't wait for the opening in the spring of 64. And I didn't go to the fair the first month. I had some health issues and some other stuff going on. So I started going to the fair in May. And my goal was to see every single pavilion, national, international, industrial, amusement, in the first year. And just before the fair closed, I actually met that goal.
That's great.
But, I mean, the fair was such a magical place, especially certain pavilions like the GE Pavilion, the Bell Telephone, the Ford and GM Pavilions. A lot of the IBM Pavilion, which showed off early uses of computers.
Doc Technical was really impressed by that. His dad was working for IBM in those days.
Oh, was he really? Because that was one of the... But in those days, even the international pavilions, and I was a skinny little runt, but man, I took advantage of all the Tad steaks and the Belgian waffles. I mean, I had it all. And one reason was the fact that the bus that went to the World's Fair from my area stopped right in front of my apartment complex.
Wow.
And then we got off at one of the other gates, not the main gate, and it was the Rodman Street gate. Now, a few weeks into it, as a local, I noticed certain kids would get off the bus and run to the left. So one afternoon I followed and found that there was a hole in the fence.
The whole earth might be called a hole if you're on the inside looking out, and whole golden cities might be hid at the bottom of a bottomless pit. Even wholesome humans have holes, though we're hardly whole at all. In fact, we're wholly holy, as the Holy Book says in the Book of Holes, chapter 1, and they knew not their holes from an ass on the ground. holes are positively attractive. Let's go inside one and see.
Wow.
So I could go an unlimited of times because there was, for me, no admission price.
That must have been really something, living right next to the World's Fair and being able to go in and out when you wanted to rather than just being a tourist.
That was an advantage, for sure. And so one of the things, and it's amazing how when you listen to the Bozos album, how
yeah.
Firesign was able to replicate orally, A-U-R-A-L-L-Y, orally,
right.
the feeling that you got when you went walked into some of these pavilions.
Hmm.
And
I thought so too, yeah.
You know, when I listen to that, it brings me right back to the days of my youth where I was actually in some of those World's Fair pavilions, stepping on a yellow line, whether it was moving or not. And
yeah.
But one of the things I also did, because I was I also discovered in June, I think it was, when the first Goodyear blimp arrived. And the Goodyear blimps would give aerial tours of the fair. So a lot of times when I was at the fair, I could look up and wave and figure out I knew who the pilot was.
That's neat.
Ah.
It was kind of incredible. I mean, because there were not just one blimp, but two blimps. And they, at that time, 64, 65, were the only two operating blimps on this planet.
Huh.
So then they were parked right out in my backyard within walking distance and within view of my living room window.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, I took advantage of that, and I went and met the pilots and the crew and the PR people, and they took me on many flights. And I also wrote my first journalism article about the blimps visit, and it was published in October when the fair was about to close.
Kane!
Mr. Kane, what is so special about this newspaper?
Special? My newspaper will be so clean, you could press a duck in it.
Oh!
Mr. Birdseed?
Yes, sir?
Go to press.
Okay, boss. Go to press!
But, you know, there were just like I said, certain pavilions that I wanted to go to over and over again, but they were long lines.
Well, getting back to Bozos
yeah.
for a second, I was thinking the whole Futurama thing. You know, I mean, Futurama was part of the exhibits there, and that's what they're doing in Bozos.
Right. That was the GM pavilion.
Yeah.
The General Motors pavilion. And that was one of those that I tried to visit as often as possible.
I remember that one, yeah.
So what I would do, because I was a local and kind of like got it, I guess I was an open-headed little kid, I was observing when I was leaving the pavilions that I could see the people coming in to the pavilion. So when I went to the fair, I would actually go in the exit. And I joined the line that was waiting to get in. And I don't think I waited more than 10 minutes for any, visit any of these popular pavilions. Because I had a little trick.
That's pretty slick.
I try not to teach it to too many of my friends.
Right.
But it worked.
Wow.
Well, I was interested to see that it wasn't actually endorsed by the Bureau of International Expositions, and Great Britain, France, and Germany, as well as Canada and Australia, didn't participate. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, because in 62 they had a World's Fair on the West Coast, and that was the officially sanctioned World's Fair.
Oh.
So I went to that, right.
Did you?
That was Seattle.
Yeah. That was, I did a collage about it at the Tween Plate about 2 weeks ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
It was my first World's Fair, and then New York and Montreal and one in Japan and then one in Vancouver. So five altogether.
Wow, that's great.
That is me, because I know there's a lot of groups that talk about World's Fairs and stuff. I'm a member of a couple of the New York World's Fair groups, and we actually have get-togethers. We have gatherings in the spring and in the fall, and we tour the fairgrounds and say, this used to be here, this used to be there. So, I mean, there's still an interest. And there are still some of the original buildings from the 64-65 World's Fair, like the New York State Pavilion, which they're trying to figure out what to do with. The Unisphere, I'm sure, will stay there forever. And then there's the Tennis Center, where a couple of the pavilions used to be. So there's still, the park is there. It's to a local, what they're doing to the park is a travesty, but it doesn't look like there'll be another World's Fair there, not in my lifetime anyhow, unfortunately. But
I don't think they're doing World's Fair very much anymore.
No, well, look at the world.
Yeah.
It doesn't really pay. But I was glad that I was alive and, knowing during my formative years when I was very young. When I was 14, the second year of the fair, I continued my journeys. But now I entered a science fair contest at the World's Fair, and they gave us plenty of free passes and also VIP, so we didn't have to wait in line for some of those pavilions. And we were supposed to study the science that was involved with the World's Fair pavilions.
Right.
Then they sat you down, and you took a test, and I happened to be one of the winners. So I actually won an award, and I got to shake Robert Moses' hand and talk to him for a few seconds.
Cool.
Oh.
Christ and Moses fly to New York. Transcontinental, $88 to Chicago, $30. All right, now let's see what they would make. They'd probably make... They said, what's playing at St. Pat's? Oh, good double bill, Spellman and Sheen. That's okay. Oh, Mr. Spellman, oh, Mr. Sheen. Okay, now, Christ and Moses both possessed humility. Why? Wisdom, that's it. Anybody who is secure, there's never any hostility, because he's cool. Yeah. Anyone who is above you, even, they know. So they just stand on the back of St. Patrick's.
And also, I was able to extend my interest in the Goodyear blimps. And at that point, I started inviting people for rides. And I was wearing a shirt that was just like the crew shirt that the guys wore. And so, you know, when I was over out at the airfield, I felt like I was also part of that whole family of Goodyear blimp people.
Nice.
And some of those people who are still with us are still my friends.
That's great.
So, yeah, one of the pilots, he became an executive at Goodyear Airship Operations, and then he retired and moved to Pensacola, Florida, and he helped rebuild one of the old Navy gondolas. So these guys are still around. They're still active. I mean, once you get helium in your blood, you just can't get rid of it. But to be able to combine my two loves of the World's Fair and the blimps, that's really started me off in a different direction, life direction, than I was planning on, and got me interested in journalism, which is why I went to Syracuse University and studied media and discovered the Fire Sign Theater.
Ah, that's cool.
And I don't know if I would have... I probably would have been a straight poop and never even heard of Fire Sign if it wasn't for the fact that I went to Syracuse University.
How were you introduced to the Fire Sign Theater through that?
Well, one of those nights where there was a lot of smoke in the air, shall we say.
Okay.
Somebody came in with this album and says, you got to listen to this. And we put the record on the turntable, and we're really sloshed, and just all sat back, dark in the room, and I discovered a new world. Because there was nothing like the Fire Sign Theater. I mean, I like comedy. I always like comedy albums. I never, never heard anything like that before.
Which album was it?
Nick Danger.
So Two Places.
Yeah, how can you be in two places at once? And then I became addicted, and I tried to get my hands on everything that they had put out. And also, having the advantage of working at the campus radio station, they started getting copies of the albums and they started playing them on the air. And I used to help manage a club at Syracuse University called Jabberwocky. And sometimes we would have theme nights. And I always made sure that once every few months we had a Fire Sign Theater night where everybody would just come in, get really wrecked, get beers and food and just listen to the albums.
Must have been incredible fun.
It was so different, and it really changed me, because what they did is put me in a different place. My mind felt like it really opened up more than it could have ever opened up. And then, as I said earlier, when I heard Bozos, the ambiance, everything that was of the World's Fair, they were able to capture without any pictures, without any video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. When I heard Bozos, I thought, this is the World Fair again.
And it exactly was. But, you know, you didn't see it. But if you had, especially if you had the experience,
you were
transported back to an earlier time when it did exist, and when you were able to go into these pavilions and see the history of man or see what our future is going to look like.
Do you know if any of the fire signs ever went to any World's Fairs?
Well, I know when I looked at the DVD the other day of Everything You Know Is Wrong Declassified.
Yeah.
And DVD number two.
Right.
They have in 1970 some film footage of some of the relics of that World's Fair on film. But whether they ever went to the World, they had to have gone, because how else could they have gotten it so right?
That's what I think, yeah. Proctor would have been living in Manhattan in those days, in 64, 65.
Then he probably came out to the fair. I should have met him.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
And wasn't Bergman on the East Coast at that time also?
To my knowledge, only Proctor was there. Osmond lived in New York before. He moved to L.A. in about maybe 62, 63, something like that, when he left WBAI and went to KPFK. I'm not sure what year that was.
Wow, because he must have been in New York also. I mean, these guys must have had that experience, because how could they ever recreate it?
Yeah, it's so much like Bozos, from my memory. I've been looking through YouTube video, of which there is a great deal from the fair, and reliving things that I'd forgotten about. I'd forgotten about Sherlock Holmes at the IBM Pavilion, but I remember seeing it when I did, and that was great.
And the smoke ring, Meet Me at the Smoke Ring?
Don't remember that.
There was one pavilion where they would puff out, I think it was United Cigar or something, they'd puff out these smoke rings. It was the same technology that was used for the Camel smoke ring sign in Times Square.
Okay, look, one at a time, one at a time. I'm not the president. Here's the story. They took my smokes, they snatched my axe. I could see the handwriting on the wall.
Where'd you learn to read hieroglyphics, Joe?
Very funny, very funny.
Yes, Ed. Has it gone through your head yet that you're just a drawing of a camel, a cartoon?
I do know I'm not a camel, Hal. I know that much. I am a logo. Get
Joe,
that straight.
Joe, they say your stomachs are gone,
I got two stomachs left, Wiley. Who cares?
Joe, Boston the Babylizer.
Yes,
here.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Any plans for the future?
Yeah, party.
Yeah, well, then what's the problem? What's the problem?
The problem is they crossed the line and wanted to take my shades. I'm going where everyone else is going. It's the millennium, stupid. I'm going to the big one. Let them try and keep me out. Yeah.
And so Joe vaulted through his signature smoke ring.
And the defeated dromedary peeled off behind the wheel of his horse heavy muscle car.
A beautiful machine.
Oh, that famous sign. Right.
And that happened to be developed by Douglas Lee, L-E-I-G-H.
Uh-huh.
Now, Douglas Lee, when I was watching the a lot of the Times Square signs were Douglas Lee signs, including the Camel smoke ring sign, and he also had an animation sign. So if you look at that, the fire sign visits the East Coast,
right?
And they show some of the Broadway signs. Well, one of those signs was an animated sign with just animations, like cartoons.
Yeah.
And the person who did those cartoons was Otto Messmer. And Otto Messmer was the guy that developed Felix the Cat.
You'll feel like King Felix with our double helix.
It'd be good to know which of those home movies features the New York Fair so that we can put up a link for the folks.
I think it's Back to the East Coast or something to that effect.
Well, why don't you email me on that one?
I think it's number four, I think, on the DVD number two.
Al, did you ever go to any of the Disneylands or Disney Worlds?
Yes, I did. I did visit Disneyland briefly once, but I spent a couple of times, two or three times at Disney World. And it was very pleasurable to see some of the things that were at the New York World's Fair still existed.
You see, I lived in L.A. in 64 until really 69. And so I'm not sure if I would have seen, for example, the GE Pavilion or Small World originally in New York or whether I saw them originally in Disneyland. I'm not sure about that.
Interesting. Because I was able to make the comparison, you know, when I went, because I went the opening year of Disney World.
Oh, I've never been to the one in Florida, just the one in Anaheim and the one in Tokyo.
A couple of my college buddies and I, last minute, we decided we were on an intersession, and we were bored, so we went into my friend's car and drove south and ended up at the park, spent the whole day at the park, and because we had to drive through the south, and in those days they didn't like long hairs, we went clean. However, when we were leaving the park, the guy that was operating the monorail, we asked if we could go into the front car with the operator, and they said, sure. And when we got in, he closed the doors, and he says, anybody got a pipe? Somebody gave him a nice little chunk of hash that day, and
that's cool.
So we ended up pinning it, but it's okay. It was like, it was just like the perfect bozo ending that day. And of course, at that time, I already knew about the Fire Sign Theater, so it was a bozo experience if I ever had one.
That's amazing.
But
wow.
But I remember, and we did have one little orange pill with us. So we split that in half, me and a friend of mine, and we experienced that amusement park from the eyes of a child, basically.
Small world.
And actually, not the small world, but we went into the haunted house.
Oh, that'll be a trip.
And as soon as it went dark, that's when everything started happening.
Oh, yeah.
And then the rest of the day, we just really enjoyed the park. I mean, and we were like little kids. I mean, and it was so much like the World's Fair.
Yeah.
I recall the animatronics in the Disney part of it, and, of course, the small world. Lincoln talking some of his quotes with the animatronic Lincoln. And so,
yeah, well, able to stand, he'd stand up and sit back down again.
Yeah, it was pretty wild for that time.
You know, you have to think back. I mean, in those days, a lot of this technology didn't exist. Computer technology in 1964 wasn't known to the general public.
That's right, yeah.
And until the IBM pavilion really introduced us to what computers could do. You'd type in a question, and I guess the machine probably was as big as my living room right now.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get an answer, like, why is the sky blue, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, the big mainframe IBMs, yeah. Yeah, they had that there to introduce people. And they had video teleconferencing, which was really something.
I remember that.
Yes, at the Bell Telephone. I remember you were able to call up, like, somebody in Chicago and talk to them and see them as you're talking to them. And I figured, wow, this is great technology, and it didn't happen for many decades. And now it's just a common thing.
Like any dick, I traced the call. I started at the logical point, the phone. The wire led from it to a tiny hole in my office wall, and outside to a big pole, and then stretched to another pole, and then another, and then another, and another, and another, right through the plate glass window of the phone company.
Hello, sir. Can I help you? I'm your service representative, Nancy.
What a tomato.
What?
Perhaps you can tell me where this phone cord leads to.
Which one?
This thin black one.
Hey, who pulled the phone off my desk?
It's a wild man with one shoe, Mr. Acme.
Oh, come in, Mr. Danger.
Okay.
I've been waiting for you.
No, it's a common thing, yeah.
I mean, if the kids today, they don't appreciate this kind of like prehistory.
Yeah.
No.
They don't know. I mean, they don't know what it was back in those days because the advancement of technology was so rapid, and it's just stuff that the Fire Sign Theater develops all the time in their humor and in their albums. They really hit the nail on the head 40 years ago, 35 years ago. They were talking about stuff that actually is happening.
That's right.
And
I was listening to TV or not TV earlier, and that's really prophetic. And that's 73 or something?
Yeah, I was just thinking of that, you know, the whole cable culture.
And it happened. And just as they foresaw it.
Indeed.
But they had, I mean, it would be interesting to speak to Phil and see if he ever visited the World's Fair, or David.
Yeah.
Because they had to know stuff. I mean, there's no way that they could have done what they did without actually being in one of those pavilions, going into the main area, and then getting on the ride, going through the ride, and all those funny little things. I mean, they just brought out the humor in it, but it was just the way it happened.
Well, Kat, send him an email.
David is, well, was anyway, very obsessed with World's Fairs. He wrote poems about the Chicago World's Fair, and I know he's spoken about the 1940 World's Fair. His mother told me that her and David's father took, I guess David was then about two, to a World's Fair in San Francisco in 1939.
Damn.
Oh, his ties to World Fairs go back. But he was born in December 36, so he wouldn't have been really old enough, I don't think, to really remember much being that old.
But if Phil was in New York, that would be something to record, maybe, and I'd be happy to do it.
Oh, yeah, it would be great if we could hear from Phil, if he has any stories. Maybe not. We don't know. I'll have to inquire.
Yeah,
but
shoot him.
But, I mean, I see, like, portions of the Ford Pavilion presentation, the GM Pavilion, the Bell Telephone, and also GE.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And GE was more than just the Carousel of Progress. I don't know how many people remember the fact that after you sat in this auditorium that moved around, you know, to various stages where there was audio animatronic characters, at the end, when you'd get off, you'd go into a room and they would show you what nuclear fission was.
I don't quite remember that, but I do remember the futuristic cars in the pavilion.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I'll tell you, that's stepping on lines, stepping on moving yellow lines.
Yep, there you go.
It really happened. And, you know, I really do, you know, and my life changed, and part of it was also the Goodyear blimp and the influence that that had on me over the years.
You became Airship Al.
I certainly did.
But to have that over the World's Fair, you know, they've got all kinds of pictures on the Internet that were taken from those blimps, or whatever you want to call them. It's really just amazing.
I posted several videos of my own, some film and some still photos with It's a Small World in the background, just to show people what the layout was of the fair and all. And it's also funny that the Chrysler Pavilion changed colors from 64 to 65. In 65, it was a very colorful-looking pavilion. And so when I look at aerial shots of the fair, I'll know whether it was the 64 fair or the 65 fair.
I was there in 64.
I don't remember that pavilion at all. I just remember the Ford and the GM pavilions, as was the car pavilions.
Oh, there was so many. Like in the transportation area, there was also Sinclair with the dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard you mention it.
Model dinosaur, right? Huge model of a dinosaur.
Yeah, and they had like small dinosaurs. I've got a picture of me holding the hand of one of the baby dinosaurs. I don't have that many photos of me at the fair, unfortunately. But I know once I start going through the apartment, I know I have a box of stuff, and I'll find a lot more stuff to scan and post. But I've been posting a lot of stuff, and I just, you know, like the whole thing fascinated me. And then I got into kind of metaphysics. And through my metaphysical friends, I found out about this line. I believe it's a ley line. And it goes right from the center of the fair, right to the world, to the Statue of Liberty.
Oh.
It would be cool if there's any history on the net about that.
And it's hard to find stuff like that. It's hard to find it. But if anybody out there who's listening could do the research, I would appreciate it, sure. I do have a picture that I sent you, Kurt, if you want to post that, of the line.
Yeah, I've copied the links to the stuff you sent me on Facebook, so I'll post that for the folks.
Excellent, because like I said, it's a two-and-a-half-minute video of the two Goodyear blimps operating at Flushing Airport, mm-hmm. and flying over the fair. And then somebody on eBay was selling all these slides of the their experience with the Goodyear blimp and flying over the area, but they actually posted the photos. So I was able to download them. I tried to buy them, but somebody outbid me. But I still have copies of like about 30 photos that of the World's Fair from the Goodyear blimp.
Cool.
In color. Because I didn't start using color film until after the fair, unfortunately.
My dad was big time into 35mm slides back then. We've got trays and trays of slides from that era.
I wish I knew more back then, but I was only 13 years old. And I figured other people were taking pictures and everything, and I'd be able to see other people's pictures. I was basically there for the experience. Because I tried, like I said, I went to every single pavilion, and then a lot of them two, three times, and being able to, you know, meet the people who were letting people in and out and going through the exit to get to the entrance. So, I mean, I really did experience a lot more of the fair than the average person.
It sounds like it, yeah.
And it was an addiction, but when it closed, I remember that October when they closed the fair, and then they said it wasn't going to reopen, you know, I just, and then I saw them starting to deconstruct a lot of the pavilions, and it was a very sad part of my life, but on the other hand, it opened me up, and it woke me up and put me in a different life direction. This conversation would be happening if it weren't for those two factors, the blimps and the World's Fair.
Right. I'm glad you enjoyed it and were able to share some of your enjoyment with us. I'm just, my memories of 64 aren't that good, but I've been able to find a lot of stuff on YouTube, so I'm using a lot of that.
And I did over the years purchase a lot of DVDs of both the 39-40 World's Fair and the 64-65 World's Fair. They both fascinated me. I obviously wasn't born for the 39-40, but
right.
I did accumulate a lot of materials and things. And I still have two boxes in the closet of World's Fair memorabilia, the guidebooks and things like that. And I also still have my autographed, Robert Moses autographed program for the World's Fair Science Contest. Which also got me invited to a special trip down to Florida.
Oh.
Because I was one of the winners. I was invited to go, and my parents sent me down to Florida. It was my first trip away from home. And we visited a lot of science sites in Florida, and we had VIP treatment at Cape Canaveral.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, my life really has been a fantasy in some ways. When I look back, the things that I've done over the years really gives me great pleasure just to remember. And also my trips out to the West Coast to meet with the fire sign guys and everything. I mean, that was amazing. I was there when they taped the Peter Marshall show. I was there for a few other events, including the 1976 Papoon campaign in Santa Barbara. I stayed at David's house.
Wow.
Cool.
And Phil Austin was there, and Richard Paul, who was put the paper bag over his head to be Papoon.
Cool. You know his platform, 6 inches off the ground, so no one falls off. The guaranteed annual year.
One organism, one thought.
It's all over now on the convention floor, but the shouting, and George Papoon is the man of the hour. Ow, ow.
Oh, I mean, all these bozo experiences. I became the archivist because I could. 1974, when I met the guys, they were on an East Coast tour, and they had done Carnegie Hall, but they did a smaller venue out on Long Island called Westbury, and that's when I first met them, you know, because the next day they were coming to my studios where I worked, and they were going to do the David Susskind show. So I knew the David Susskind show production staff, and I implemented myself into the production and also got a copy for the archives.
And we're glad you do.
Indeed.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that still, that Taylor, God bless Taylor Jessen for doing what he's doing, because I sent all my 3/4-inch collection out to, you know, Taylor Jessen with the help of Ash Harlan, Dexter Fong.
Right.
And if it wasn't for him helping me organize and carry everything, that project would not have gotten done. So in his memory, I thank him and miss him.
A lot of Fire Signs, friends of the Fire Sign Theater have contributed enormously to their, all the great stuff they've done.
The tapes that you kept, I don't think they would have been able to do the Duke of Madness collection without some of your tapes, right, Kat?
That's right, yeah.
Well, and I know that there's a lot of people on the East Coast who also try to keep the memory going. Elaine Wexler with the 4-alarm fire signal.
Right.
And then the fire zine with Fred Weeble and Chris Palladino. You know, I mean, these people really were dedicated as well and kept up... the fire sign interest. But with the web and all this new technology, you know, it's just so out there that people who are really into the fire sign theater have no wants. There's just, they could go to the store and buy stuff that's just amazing.
Right.
And hopefully someday the download store will be open and open for business and bring more pleasure.
Be nice.
Thanks for all your help, for sure.
Well, I mean, it's been a pleasure all these decades, and, you know, I just wish the West Coast people and the East Coast people could get together somehow. We do electronically.
True.
We do with the electrons, but it was nice when Fred and Chris went out to Seattle.
And you too.
And they invited me to share the hotel room, and I got a flight out and spent a few days out there, and we recorded a lot of stuff there as well.
I shared a hotel room with Merlin and Doc Technical on that trip.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that was, and I posted on the Firesign page, if you look at the Firesign links, there's a pre and post Seattle video where we're sitting in the dressing room talking. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. And at the end of the show, when the Firesign guys went and just sat there, all four of them, autographing whatever people wanted them to autograph.
Well, I still have the photograph of you and Peter and Sam Longoria and David Osman and Fred and Tiny Dr. Tim and me and all of us together at the bar after the show there. That's a great picture. Great to look at all the time.
It is. Too bad Austin left.
Yeah.
Because I didn't take a lot of pictures with the guys. I mean, I have a few here and there, but I recently saw Phil here in New York. We had lunch and with Luke Poling, the gentleman who's doing the Fireside documentary.
Oh, right.
And it was Phil who took the pictures for that event. Yeah,
he loved taking pictures.
Yeah, Phil, I'll tell you, over the years, it's just been a pleasure to know Phil and know his family and just interact. And, you know, Phil was the one, because he toured more often than he and Peter. They were in New York a lot more than all four of them.
Right.
Well, I hope somebody's going to be recording the festivities in Washington, D.C.,
Well, according to Luke, the event will be filmed, but he was asked not to, but he'll get a copy of the, I guess, the event, and we're going to try to get the guys to sit down. Maybe in one of the sit-downs I could ask these guys about the World's Fair.
Great idea.
And how it relates to Bozos. But I want to keep within the script that Luke is developing. So
oh.
I don't want to step on toes.
Of course.
But Doc Tech and I are going to be driving down from New York and spending a few days with the guys. And looking forward to report what happens.
That's wonderful. Wish we could all be there with you.
You are in spirit, but I think this is enabling a lot of the East Coast people, New York,
right,
and everybody to get together and have a last fling, because who knows how many more years we have to enjoy these guys.
That's true.
Hopefully another decade or two, but, you know, one never knows.
That's true.
And, you know...
It's X.
But Peter and Austin are definitely missed, and...
they are.
But we have such a large body of work of theirs, and I don't think people really know how much exists.
Only Taylor knows, probably.
Taylor, and I know I have some things that I sent to him, like the very first live internet broadcast. Was done by everybody but Austin in here in New York.
Wow.
That was the Knitting Factory show?
The Knitting Factory show.
Yeah, I have a copy of that from somebody.
It has to be from me. I'm the only one that videotaped it.
Probably is. No, this isn't videotaped. This is audio tape.
Then it may have been recorded by them or something. I know that there was other recordings, but I think I'm the only one who actually had a video camera.
Uh-huh.
And that was wonderful. I mean, the people involved, it was very well put together, but it was also a very significant historical piece because it was the first internet broadcast. And that was, I guess, Peter. He was always into this technology. He always was advanced for what everybody else was at.
Yeah, that's true. The first Doc Technical.
Yes, and there's Peter, way back in the 70s, was also trying to push a new type of editing system for film, and it was called Shokran America. And, I mean, it was just so advanced that it was just too advanced for people. These guys were sometimes too ahead of the times. But getting back to the World's Fair, and as I, you know, frequently pass the fair site and see all those buildings that are still there and everything, and it just puts me back in time. I mean, I will never forget that 2 years of my life.
An amazing experience, for sure.
But I could bring myself back to that by just putting on Bozos.
Exactly.
There you go.
And put on the Wheeze and squeeze the Wheeze, and I'm there. So, you know, I just hope, you know, Firesign fans really look at some of the materials that they put out back in those days with, like, what were they thinking, and how did this develop? Because the one thing I know about early Firesign, especially, was it put you in a different world. I remember after discovering Firesign, I'd go into my room sometimes, put the headphone jack in, put the headphones on, toke up a little bit, and I was transported. I was, whether it was Bozos or Nick Danger or any of those albums, Waiting for the Electrician.
Movies for your head.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I tried to describe them to people back in the day. Is you'd listen to them, but your brain will be making film of the audio.
That's right.
And each person had a different experience, which is even better.
That's right.
And it was kind of like being at the World's Fair. Because everybody was looking at the same thing, but not everybody remembers the same things. Some things created a deeper impression for some people. And I have a friend that he doesn't remember the industrial pavilions as much as he remembers going to all the state pavilions. So
the state pavilion I can remember at all was the Lincoln.
The Illinois.
one.
Yeah, I mean, there was not a pavilion, international, national, that I did not visit in the first year. I had a list. And I would, damn if I wasn't going to check everything off that list. And I did.
I have official guide, New York World's Fair, 64-65, by the editors of Time Life Books.
Oh, yes. There's a 64 version. There's a 64 version and a 65 version.
Sure, yeah, there would be.
And I've got them both in that in those boxes somewhere. I really should inventory those boxes. But, I mean, I have, like, brochures and pamphlets and how they built the Unisphere or all sorts of stuff. So, and I've scanned it and I posted it to the World's Fair site. You know, some of the stuff that I've you know, accumulated over the years. But I know that I had a lot more stuff. But my parents, when I went to college, well, my dad, when I went to college, suggested that I downsize some of that stuff. Unfortunately, but I kept the most important stuff, and that's, you know, just like I archive blimps and the World's Fair and Fire Sign. So those are my three basic loves.
Good hobbies.
Yeah, and now that I'm retired, I can't wait to go through all of this stuff and relive my life once again.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to look through. I still have my first uniforms that I wore when I worked for the Good Ship stuff.
Well, so amazingly cool that you lived right next to the Expo when you could go in and out when you wanted. That's something a lot of people can't say.
I mean, it was pretty much within walking distance in those days, and also having the two blimps that stayed at Flushing Airport were within walking distance.
Yeah, that's just wild.
And sometimes, I guess, maybe I was a little bit too much for the Goodyear guys, so they would give me free World's Fair passes and put me on the bus. But, I mean, I drove my parents crazy those 2 years. They never knew where I was, when I was going to show up, and they also paid for summer camp for me, and I guilty of cutting out, making believe I was going to camp, instead wind up at the World's Fair or hanging out with the Goodyear blimp people.
Well, much bad. More interesting, I'm sure.
It, like I said, the whole thing changed my life, and if it wasn't for the World's Fair, I probably would not have discovered the Fire Sign Theater. And
thank you, World's Fair.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, and like I said, Bozos, people listen to that, please, because even if you never went to a World's Fair, in your mind, you will go to the World's Fair.
It captures the spirit.
It does. I mean, right. It's amazing. It just, I mean, even the smells of the World's Fair start coming back to me when I listen to that.
All the familiar sounds and smells of Pig Night came rushing back like a good snort of scotch. Then it struck me. 20 years later, and she's... still knocked me out. Ugh. Listen, Nancy, I smell a rat.
So do I. I think he's got my script.
Yes, Catherwood, you look for it, all right?
All right, madam.
Or the cooling on a hot summer day when you go into the pavilion and experience the air conditioning. All that stuff kind of like is in Bozos. Not to mention all those guys that I used to dress alike and follow them around. Well, that's another story. We won't get into that. But, you know, I'm glad that you guys are doing this because the World's Fair was a special time. Those 2 years, I think, not just changed my life, but changed many people's lives.
Oh, absolutely.
And, oh, I'm sorry about that. And
my family did was we went to New York. We were living in D.C. at the time. We went to the New York Fair, and then we crossed the United States and stayed at national parks. We had a camper towing across the United States, and then went down to California and went to Disneyland and then back. So I didn't get to see the World's Fair stuff at Disneyland. I just went to Disneyland in 64.
But still, how cool was that? And it was quite a trip like that.
That was quite a summer, yeah. And we did the same thing for Montreal. We went to Montreal and went across and then back.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, The traveling really didn't start happening for me until that World's Fair science contest trip. But once I started traveling, I also had an insatiable urge to leave New York and visit other places.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that was encouraged by some of the pavilions that I went to as well.
Oh, no doubt.
Mind-expanding event. And other cultures, you know, for goodness sake, especially that, to change, you know, to be able to see other cultures. And, you know, it's not all just what happens in the USA. There's a big world out there. And, in fact, that was the theme. It's, as they described it, let's see what they've got here.
The motto for the fair was Peace Through Understanding.
Yeah, the fair's theme was Peace Through Understanding, dedicated to man's achievement on a shrinking globe in an expanding universe, and was often referred to as an Olympics of progress.
That pretty much hits the nail on the head.
That's cool.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that I remember, like, for example, when I went to Mexico once, I kept on looking for these guys on a pole that was swinging down on a rope.
Hey, you guys. Just at the age when you're looking for an interesting and exciting career in the military, get into the sky where they can't find you. Higher than you've ever been before, behind the border, as a proud member of the free Mexican Air Force.
Yes, skimming low out of border canyons and across below sea level salt flats, you'll be jockeying the big birds, B-25s, flying uncounted tons of contraband into these United States.
Yes, spreading Mexico's natural resources is a really fine job for any young man of military age. So take off with guys like me in the free Mexican Air Force.
You know, I mean, there was just so many international pavilions and international cuisine that I was introduced to.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've always been a finicky eater all my life, but there was some Germany. Was it Germany? I forgot what pavilion, but I got addicted to certain European foods.
I remember
because we were exposed to it.
You say, Cat?
I remember the Belgian waffles with the strawberries and the whipped cream. Those were really good.
To this day, I have never had a waffle that was as good as the ones that they made in 64, 65. There are places that make Belgian waffles.
Right.
But it's not the same. With the powder, and then you had to finish it off with the powdered sugar.
Yeah.
But, that was like one of the attractions. And they had the those food places with the bubbles on top. Those white bubbles. So no matter where you were, you know, you'd look out if you were hungry, and if you saw the white bubbles, you knew you could always get something to eat there.
Ah, forget about that.
And the food was so cheap.
Sir?
Yes, Major?
Pass the syrup, General?
That's a good idea, Chuck. But syrup won't stop them.
But,
next.
Sir?
Colonel?
Are you nuts?
That is just exactly what they want you to believe.
The eggs, sir?
Let's just call them the phenomena.
Well, if I may respectfully submit, sir, I think you've got your phenomena scrambled, General.
What about my eggs, dear?
Honey, they're in everybody's eggs.
Great thing to do, and it's too bad they're not doing it anymore, as you say. It really makes a big difference to have different cultures being, you know, they're right for you, and people don't have to think of each other as monsters and all the rest of it. You know,
well,
especially the USSR at the time.
A friend of mine tried to reestablish the World's Fair site for another World's Fair back in 89-90. That was the late David Oates. And he was to World's Fairs as I am to blimps.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a personal friend of Robert Moses, who gave him some of the original models and things.
Oh, wow.
And it was David's hope and wishes that we could, 25 years later, do the same thing. But he met with so much resistance.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And it pissed me off, because that would have been a wonderful thing to have done it all over again. But at that point, the world had changed, and things were not as optimistic back in the late 80s and early 90s as they were back in 64 and 65.
It was a very different time.
It was a very optimistic time.
That's right.
And it was before people's eyes were opened up by the Vietnam War, for example.
Mm-hmm.
and what the military-industrial complex really meant. So, you know, it also, some of the pavilions like GE and all, you know, it was a double-edged sword because they were promoting stuff, but they were also doing stuff to promote the military and killing people.
Right.
Once a hippie, always a hippie. You know, but I do remember a lot of the, you know, the protests and stuff like that when I started going to college, which was back in 69 is when I started college. And at that point, it was a different world. It was an absolutely different world. People were, you know, besides the protests, people were, their minds were being expanded. And a lot of that had to do with the Fire Sign Theater. Because in their own little way, they did, you know, like in their albums, show you things that you wouldn't have ordinarily seen or you wouldn't have recognized unless it happened. So I thank the Fire Sign Theater for doing what they did.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
The reason I wrote, one of the reasons I wrote the book was I want to show people that it has more to do with listening to your higher mind, following your better instincts, and not being afraid to accept really inexplicable hints as to the direction of your life or the choices that you make as you find your way through this bizarre, interesting dimension that you've been given the opportunity to experience and to explore.
It's just too bad that they never got that big popular push and made them a nationally known comedy group. But in some ways, that might have been a better thing. That might have been a good thing.
Maybe.
They might have had to change their format some, you know, to be more popular. They might have had to do more Python-esque type stuff that's easy to get and that you don't really have to listen to the meaning of what they're doing.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct on that. You know, they did do things that no other comedy group did.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
They taught things that nobody else was teaching at the time. And I just, when I met them in 1974, I couldn't believe how easy it was for me to become part of the Fire Sign Theater family.
And nobody in comedy was doing the kind of production values they were doing.
You know, there's so many things like God's Little Clowns and a lot of other Fire Sign Theater productions that people don't even know about, but it's all brilliant work. And it's all the combination of four minds coming together to give us this. And each person was unique in how they impacted or affected us. Especially Peter with his advanced knowledge of technology that was going to happen before it even happened.
And Austin's expertise in the studio.
And absolutely in his writing, his the characters that he created, and Proctor Berman, don't get me started on those guys. And the fact that they toured a lot, you know, just as Proctor and Bergman, and brought that Fire Sign Theater ambiance to so many more people.
Yeah, what this country needs is really almost stand-up. I mean, that's as close to stand-up comedy in a club as they ever got.
That and Gothamathon, which we have a copy of.
That I don't know.
Gothamathon was done in a club, Paul Colby's club here in New York, and Steve Gilmore produced. One night we had color cameras in the venue, and we recorded that. And that was a very stand-up comic, but kind of slapstick vaudeville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's an amazing piece, and that led to the writing of the movie Americathon.
Ah, okay.
See, the Procter & Bergman Gothamathon gave the writers Americathon, basically. There's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, like, Zachariah, one of the best friggin' country, western, psychedelic movies that was ever done.
I haven't seen it yet.
You must.
Okay.
It won't be around for long.
They're cleaning it.
No, but that's another. I mean, the music in that, the writing. I mean, there's a couple of scenes in there. You could see Procter and Bergman in the movie, but the scenes that were written and everything, so pure fire sign theater, and then here it is like a space comedy western. And really, to me, that movie represented brotherhood and friendship on a different level. If you haven't seen it, you should try to get a copy and watch Zachariah. I highly recommend that. There's so many other things that were done. There was a lot of, like, for example, Procter & Bergman made two appearances on Bill Boggs' Midday Live, which I helped produce. And then all four of them in 1981, when they were on tour, came to the studios. So that's something that really needs to get out there. So both the Susskind show and the Bill Boggs show. But the difference is Bill Boggs was a fan and kind of knew their material, whereas David Susskind just sat there in the middle of the four of them, and he was like dazed and confused.
I'll bet.
Well, I remember... when I was walking around after the show and I bumped into Susskind, I asked him what he thought. He goes, "What the hell just happened?" He had no clue. But that was where I worked at the time. I was working at Channel 5 Studios.
Nice.
So I was able to get a really nice quality copy of that and all the other stuff that Procter & Bergman or Firesign ever did. I always got like master quality tapes.
Excellent. I'm so glad that you did. Taylor's got his work cut out for him.
And plus, the Peter Marshall show, which was like a variety show in 77. It was a summer show. And it was David and Phil Austin and Richard Paul and a very early, very young Harry Shearer. You ever see that?
I've seen that.
I know.
Yes.
That was amazing. It was so funny, and it was a pleasure to be in the studio audience. And then after the show, I was backstage with the guys, and they were told that was the only skit that they were going to use, that they didn't have to shoot anymore, that they weren't going to be used anymore, and that really sucky. And then as we were leaving the studios, passing by Peter Marshall's dressing room, where they were having a party. "Hey, guys," he was so drunk, "come on in, let's talk, let's have fun." "We just got fired, fuck you." But, early Harry Shearer. So, the people that the Firesign worked with over the years is also amazing. I remember one show here in New York when John Goodman came out during the Pizza to Go No Anchovies skit. There was so many people that were impacted by the Firesign Theater that we don't know about yet.
Probably too.
But, putting out these DVDs, keeping the memories alive, and maintaining the websites and everything, very important. Very important. Because there's old fans, and yet sometimes there are new fans.
Sometimes, that's right.
And some of the new fans don't quite get it, but it's nice that they're at least trying to learn.
That's right.
And it's something that will never die.
Well, the problem is the radio station format has changed so much over the years. You know, it's hard for somebody to play something like Bozo's, unless it's a college station or something. And even then.
Yeah, because in those days you could play a whole album, if not at least one side of the album.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, back in the day, yeah, when people were playing entire albums, yes. 20-minute yes songs or whatever. It's just, unfortunately, it's hard to get that done these days on mainstream media.
And that's why there'll never be anything even close to a Firesign Theater.
Probably.
It'll never happen again. And
it'll be unique and of their time.
And we're blessed to still have two of the original Bozos around.
Okay, man. Great talk with both of you. And we shall gather together on Thursday.
Sounds like a plan to me. I'm looking forward to it.
Talk to you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Hey, have a wonderful evening. Take care.
Was die Attentäter betrifft, die in Berlin den Anschlag auf die deutsch-arabische Gesellschaft verübt haben, ist die Polizei einen Schritt weiter gekommen. Der nach dem Anschlag...
Manhattan. Then we take